Hey Health Junkies, Dr. Krause here. Just wanted to jump in and let you know about a new feature that I'm adding to the podcast. It's the ability to ask me questions. I've had a ton of folks tell me that they would love for me to cover their questions on the podcast, so I'm going to do it. So each week I will be adding a couple of questions that I'm going to answer to each of the podcasts. And if it's a juicy enough question, I just may dedicate a whole podcast to it. So if you're interested in asking a question, head on over to my website at drjkrausend.com. Check out a blue button on the right-hand side that says Ask a Podcast Question. Hit me up there. Or you can also access the button through my podcast notes also on my website. So head on over there, ask me some questions. I look forward to answering them soon. All right, let's get on with the podcast.
Hey, health junkies. It's time for The Health Fix. Join your host, Dr. Jeanine Krause, as she gives you a dose of what you need to know and do right now to take control of your health from the inside out, to rebel against aging, look damn good, fight stress, and laugh every day.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Jeanine Krause, and today's episode is all about toning up your vagus nerve. Now, before it sounds like I'm going to talk to you about a workout, it's totally not like that. In fact, the vagus nerve is known as our wandering nerve because it has an effect on so many areas of our body. And it's one that seems to keep coming up over and over again in my practice. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to share it with the world because I think a lot of people don't necessarily have this strong connection as to why, when they're extremely anxious or extremely depressed, why they might have other things that go on in their body, like nausea and vomiting. Why does that go along with the anxiety attack? Or why do we have such severe ear ringing when we're stressed? So this vagus nerve, it has a bunch of different branches, and it comes from either side of your cerebellum, which is the lower part of your brain, and it also comes from the brainstem. And so these are very basic, as I used to call it when I taught anatomy and physiology, these are your caveman nerves, because the vagus nerve is cranial nerve 10, and our cranial nerves are our basic functions. And of course, the fight or flight response is one of our basic functions to keep us out of trouble. However, most of us are stuck in that fight or flight response. And the vagus nerve has something to do with that. It's part of the umbrella of the autonomic nervous system, otherwise known as automatic. It kind of happens whether you like it to happen or not. And it regulates the sympathetic, so that's that fight or flight, but it also regulates the parasympathetic nervous system, which is our chill nervous system that a lot of us struggle to even activate at all. So the idea with this podcast is that we want to tone the vagus nerve to be strong so we can adapt to life, environmental, and situational stressors really well, versus one thing sets us off and it's a cascade of crazy from there on out. So the vagus nerve can lose its tone really easily, unfortunately, it seems, for a lot of people. But it does take time, I guess. It's not as easy as I would say. But it does seem like we can go from 0 to 60 in terms of quick decomposition, if you want to think of it this way, unfortunately, or deregulation of our nervous system response. And it really boils down to a lot of different factors that are playing into your body at the same time that are causing imbalances. So by that, I mean, if you're eating well, but you're stressed with work, but you're still sleeping well and things of that nature, your amount of vagus nerve dysregulation might happen a little slower compared to someone who is not eating well, who's not sleeping, quite possibly going through an acute reaction in terms of an extremely stressful event. So that being said, this vagus nerve can lose its tone when we have chronic stress that leads to behaviors that keep us from taking care of ourselves, like I just mentioned. Most of us, when we're stressed, we sometimes can't sleep, or we're waking up multiple times during the night. Sometimes we're waking up to go to the bathroom multiple times during the night, which is a stress reaction because the vagus nerve has an effect on your bladder and your ureters. Now, poor food choices, add that into the mix, because basically when we get stressed, we either are busy at work or something and don't have time to cook for ourselves, so we eat a lot of junk food, or we eat out, or we're eating comfort foods. And those guys can lead to irritation in the gut, non-beneficial gut bugs growing, and then it can also lead to infections like viruses that are not kept in check. And also blood sugar issues too, because if we're hitting up the sugary sweet treats or hitting up the alcohol pretty hard to manage our stress, these are all things that are not beneficial behaviors. Now, one of the biggest issues that can cause our vagus nerve to lose tone and lose its ability to regulate us is viruses. Most of us have herpes simplex virus 1 floating in our system. I think there was an estimate of 95% of the human population has it floating around. Herpes virus simplex 2, so HSV2, Epstein-Barr virus, which is known as the monovirus or the Kissing virus, the Kissing disease virus. That guy, a lot of us have that. Probably about 50% of the population has that floating around. Top that off with hepatitis C, hepatitis B, and then, of course, the virus that causes shingles, too. Herpes zoster, a lot of us have that going on as well. So we've got a lot of issues. Now, top that off with bacterial things like Staph aureus, strep, chronic strep stuff. And we've got like a little petri dish inside of us of a plethora of problems that can create inflammation in the body. And so you can see if you have these multiple different factors, such as not recovering well from the day, you're not sleeping, you're not taking care of yourself, you're not resting during the day, you're not taking breaks, then you eat poorly, and then you've also got all these bugs and viruses. Yeah, no wonder our brains are broken. We've got depression, anxiety, etc. Another biggie of the vagus nerve is dizziness. And I have a lot of patients with chronic dizziness, also with high blood pressure, that goes out of whack the more their life becomes out of control. And this is also a vagus nerve type of situation. So when we want to tone this vagus nerve, we need to also think about keeping inflammation in check in the body. And when I talk about inflammation, it's kind of this, the topic's interesting because I think for a lot of us, we can't really visualize what is inflammation. Inflammation is anything in the body that doesn't feel good. And by that, I mean the like hallmark signs of inflammation are heat, it's redness, and it's pain, and it's swelling. If you have any four of those categories anywhere in the body, and by that I mean bloating is a sign of swelling. Swelling, sock swelling, so the sock lines that you may have, that's a swelling issue. That means you've got inflammation in your body. Now, how do you deal with it? There's a bunch of different ways to work to deal with it. I'm going to talk about it later on in the podcast. But unfortunately, what a lot of people do is they ignore their pain symptoms. They ignore gut issues. They ignore that maybe they're not as happy as they once were before. And they don't do anything about it. And then all of a sudden, it just hits them. And then usually it hits like a big, fat smack in the face, I could say. So for example, in the last couple of weeks, I've had a couple of patients that stand out more than others in my mind because, unfortunately, this is so common that I would say probably every single day I see at least two or three people that are in this category of loss of vagus nerve tone. But the typical situation is of someone that's younger, has been relatively healthy most of their life, pretty vibrant. They're going through a stressful period in life. Maybe they hate their job. Maybe they don't like their partner. They're not communicating well. Maybe they went through a breakup. And they end up not taking care of themselves as well. And by that, I mean not eating well, drinking excess of alcohol, not sleeping like they should. And then this goes on for a little period of time. Now they might notice that they have gut issues. They might notice that they have stomach pain, things of that nature. But what then happens is they start to notice different symptoms. Usually it starts with minimal anxiety. They start to feel like they're working themselves up too quick. Then it'll turn into getting a low-grade headache. Then it'll often turn into like abdominal pain, much like an ulcer, kind of mid-epigastric kind of area, meaning like right where your rib cage, it kind of comes together in the middle of the abdomen. Then it'll turn into nausea. Sometimes it'll turn into vomiting. Then it'll go to like dizziness with extreme anxiety to the point where this makes that person feel a little crazy. And so they think that they're having a heart attack. They think that they're going to die. There's a brain aneurysm. Something's happening to them, you know, quite profound, because they have all of these different symptoms coming up. It's like the body's in this big fight or flight storm. And they go to the ER. The ER can't figure anything out. The heart's fine. Everything's great. They're, for all intents and purposes, they look healthy. But they don't feel that way. This is your classic vagus nerve lost its tone breaking point. Now, what will happen beyond this is that vagus nerve is going to keep declining in terms of its ability to manage stress. And so a lot of people will not seek out help. They'll just be like, okay, I'm not crazy. I'm not going to die. I just am not dealing with stress. But then they don't do anything about it, and they just let these things keep going. That's a big problem. Now, other people will notice this process kind of evolve slowly. So maybe they'll end up with chronic headaches, they'll have dizziness, their ears will start to ring. This is kind of a slower process for these folks, but it's going to eventually end in a big boom, and where the vagus nerve tends to just really lose its tone. So milder symptoms, I would say, for some folks might be light headaches here and there, might have the digestive issues, might find that they shake a little bit when they get in touch with a stressful situation. Even like a loud siren going by them can set them off into like a little bit of a shake. But how quickly you recover from that determines your vagus nerve's tone. Another example is if you're able to bounce back after working out, and that's recovery time. So these are big things to think about just in terms of where your life's at right now and where your vagus nerve tone is at. One of the ways that folks can look at this is, one, assess the symptoms I've just described, and I'll talk about them in a little bit more detail towards the end of the podcast, but also you can use your heart rate and your pulse to determine how you're doing. If your pulse jumps variably, but it stays at a set point, and it can jump based on exercise, it can jump based on a stressful situation, but it comes back in to the baseline quick, then you're doing pretty good. But folks that end up with an elevated heart rate, elevated blood pressure for long periods of time, days on end, weeks on end, and can't seem to get it back into the normal range, that's a low vagus nerve tone. So we're going to talk about that in great detail a little bit later. So let's talk a little bit about the history of this vagus nerve. So there's a German physiologist back in 1920. His name's Otto Lowy. And this fella had a dream about the release of acetylcholine. And acetylcholine is the main neurotransmitter, so neurochemical, that is released from the vagus nerve. And this fellow had this concept of how perfectly acetylcholine comes out of the vagus nerve and has the effects on the different organs that it does. And he called it Vagustoff, very fancy term there. And this idea actually won him the Nobel Prize in 1921. And this was a big deal because acetylcholine was the first neurotransmitter that was ever identified by scientists. We now know that we have a host of other neurotransmitters, and I'm going to talk about a few of them that play in with the vagus nerve in particular and how they all kind of coordinate how we respond to stressors. So the vagus nerve, like I mentioned before, communicates via release of acetylcholine. Our muscles also use acetylcholine to contract and relax. Same thing with our muscles that are around the gut, the smooth muscles. Also, our muscles that are around our arteries, same thing. And vessels in particular. Now, acetylcholine is made from choline, which is an amino acid. And it binds with something called acetyl-CoA, which coincidentally is the first molecule that we use to get into the energy cycle where we make ATP, otherwise known as energy. So choline, being an amino acid, comes from meats, dairy, poultry, eggs in particular are very high in choline, and fish. And the highest level of choline actually comes from animal livers, which not too many people are eating liver pate these days for many reasons. But one 3-ounce serving of meat, so being red meat, being poultry, also being dairy or fish, this actually contains 70 milligrams of choline, which is a decent amount of choline to help you to keep your nervous system reactions in check. Coincidentally, chocolate, peanut butter, Brussels sprouts, and broccoli also have a significant level of choline, which I find interesting because chocolate and peanut butter seem to be very popular foods for those who are looking for some comfort in their life. Brussels sprouts and broccoli, not so much. However, the new advent of Brussels sprouts fried 80 billion different ways in restaurants seems to maybe be a new comfort food on the rise. Who knows? Maybe we're all craving the choline in the Brussels sprouts to help us keep our fight or flight systems in check. I don't know. Maybe it's the new stress food. But the issue here with chocolate and peanut butter, of course, I like to eat a lot of them, but it doesn't really help with your waistline. Interestingly, too, wheat, and in particularly the germ, so the sticky part that's like kind of encapsulating the wheat kernel is, it's kind of like the wrapping on the wheat kernel has a lot of choline. And of course, we are a society that is now avoiding wheat because of the hybridization of it and our difficulty digesting it. So being vegan and gluten-free, you might not be getting a lot of choline into your diet. This might explain the phenomenon that I do see in my practice. Hands down, a lot of folks who are vegan and gluten-free tend to have more anxiety issues in my practice. There's no research on this, but this is me saying that. And it's not that I'm hating on people who are vegan, and it's not that I'm hating on people who do not eat gluten. This is just something I've seen, and it makes me wonder. Even though the research out there says you can't get enough choline from your diet exclusively, your body does help you to create these different things. But I think the point being is, I think it's important to keep the foods that keep our nervous system going in mind. And if you are eating a vegan diet, you might want to be thinking about supplementing with choline. Interestingly enough, too, about choline, I have used phosphatidylcholine to help with brain function and boosting memory and whatnot for the brain. So we'll talk about that a little bit later. Might be interesting to have on board if you're having some issues with what I'm kind of mentioning today in terms of some of the symptoms that go along with low vagus nerve tone. Okay, so acetylcholine, you can get your body to release it itself. And all you have to do is breathe. It's like this amazing ability of calm. And what you're doing is you're taming your inflammation reflex, which I'm going to talk about here in a little bit, because the stronger that your vagus nerve is, the less inflammation that it is going to provoke in your body, because it's in charge of inhibiting inflammation. And so if it's not working well, you have nothing, well, not nothing, but you have one of your mechanisms in which you block inflammation in the body shut down. So breathing. 5-count inhale and a 7-count exhale. I just felt my shoulders go down. You try it. 5-count inhale and a 7-count exhale. Yeah, that felt nice. So you just boosted a little acetylcholine and you're fighting inflammation naturally, and you didn't even have to take a pill for it. Awesome. Okay, so if we want to maintain that vagus nerve tone, we've got to stay chill. But obviously, staying chill and in the parasympathetic state isn't always the way that we can live life, really, because we have environmental stressors, we have life stressors, we have a lot of different things at play here. So let's talk about what is happening in the body when we do get a stressful situation coming down the line. So when we're stressed, epinephrine is released into the bloodstream. And epinephrine is the main fight or flight hormone. It's converted from cortisol, which we all know of as being our hormone that is nice and strong when we are stressed out. And we get a response in the heart, which can cause heart palpitations, it can cause chest pain, it can cause anxiety, it can cause difficulty breathing, because also the fight or flight response does go into the lungs. It could cause difficulty swallowing, and then you could have stomach pain. And so you could see how this stuff goes on. Now, if you get stressed and it's while you're eating, now you might have some nausea or vomiting, or you might just have nausea going on and on. Now, that lovely vagus nerve is going to sense the epinephrine in the bloodstream, and it's going to send a signal to the brain to trigger the release of norepinephrine. And it's going to trigger that into the amygdala and the hippocampus. And interestingly enough, the amygdala and hippocampus are memory structures. And so this is why the vagus nerve is to blame for some of the post-traumatic stress disorder types of symptoms. And also our ability to recall situations in which are similar to what our original trauma was that affected us. So you can imagine that a lot of us have post-traumatic stress disorder in different aspects. You know, some are provoked by extreme, terrible, traumatic incidents, and then others have short, small traumas that have built up to have this message go to the brain that it needs to be on fight or flight. And once that message gets to the brain via the vagus nerve, that norepinephrine really gets things going in the amygdala and hippocampus, which happen to be, like I mentioned before, memory structures. So how would I relate this to real life? Well, if I take out all the science words, I'll give an example from my previous position. I would be on my way to work, and I would start to feel my whole body shake. And what happened is that the drive to work already put my body in this state of stress. Then when I would get to work, my schedule will have been packed with people into it that I know that I can't give quality time and effort to in the amount of time that those people were packed in. Like every 15 minutes, my schedule was booked out, and I would literally every single day get into the office, look at my schedule, because I couldn't look at it before because that would scare me. I would get into the office, I would look at my schedule, and all of a sudden, all of the traumatic events of how I managed to get every single patient in and taken care of would start to replay through my head. And it would create this huge reaction in my body where my heart would just pound. I would sweat. I would feel nauseous. That is not your traditional thought in terms of PTSD, so post-traumatic stress disorder. I wasn't in war. I didn't have a horrific experience. I had something that was created by me in terms of my inability to manage my stress at work. And I think this is common for a lot of people. And these are things that cause inflammation in our body. And I'm going to talk about neuroinflammation in a second. The neuroimmune system is to blame for why a lot of us can't keep our stress in check. So now I was mentioning how epinephrine in the bloodstream causes us to have that fight or flight response, and it activates the vagus nerve. And that vagus nerve sends a message to the brain to release the neurotransmitter norepinephrine into our amygdala and hippocampus, those memory areas. Now, what ends up happening is that the vagus nerve serves as the switch that takes epinephrine into the blood as a signal so that we can release norepinephrine in the brain, because epinephrine itself actually can't cross the blood-brain barrier. So the vagus nerve is the nerve sending the signal telling the brain something's not right. This is, you know, danger, danger, danger. Now, there are a lot of other signals such as histamines that tell the brain there's danger as well. But interestingly enough, the vagus nerve is in charge of how you process stress, because it's sending a signal to the brain telling the brain what to learn and when to learn it. And in this case, work, driving to work, getting to work equals stress. Brain keeps that as a memory in the hippocampus and amygdala regions as bad. Bear going to get you bad. So then you end up with this everyday PTSD syndrome That happens every time you go to work, at least in my case. Now, everyone's different, but there are situations in which it goes over and over again. So the cool part about the vagus nerve is that it's got something called neuroplasticity. It's part of the brain's plasticity, meaning we can mold the brain, we can rewire it. And so changing your outlook on going to work and changing how things happen in your environmental situation, if it's work, can rewire your brain. You can rewire it. It's thought process. It sucks. It takes a while, but it can happen. And this means that that long-term steel trap memory of yours can remember how to stay stressed, but it can also learn how not to be stressed, which is a huge impact in terms of biofeedback. And also why I'm a huge proponent of the brain sensing device, the Muse. If you have not heard of the Muse, head over to my podcast all about the Muse. And it's basically all about for people that suck at meditation. It's a great calming device. And it's what I use to help me get out of my fight or flight state that I was in that particular job. Because I think at this point I might not be alive if I didn't do that. So that vagus nerve, as I've mentioned before, is the warning signal for something that's not right. It relays it to the brain. And keep in mind that our nervous system only processes 1% of the information that comes at us. That sounds crazy, but it's true. It really only processes 1%. We filter 99% of the sensory information that comes to us. Some people are a little bit hypersensitive and can kind of process a little bit more, but on the average, it's 99% is filtered and 1% is actually dealt with. Folks who have ear ringing are not able to filter out some of the information. And how does that work? Folks who have low vagus tone are not able to filter out some of the useless information that comes in to the nervous system. And so what's happening is that vagus nerve gets triggered hundreds of thousands of times more than it should be. And so that huge frequency, like button pressing fast, 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 is like all of these boxes on a conveyor belt riding up and getting to their destination, but there's a block. And so some of them are falling off. There's just too many of them to get through at one time. And so this is kind of the thought in terms of the mechanism behind ear ringing. The vagus nerve can't keep up with all the sensory information, and so it goes on overload and the ear rings. Now, my other thought on this, which hasn't been documented at all, this is me in my head about the vagus nerve and its relation to ear ringing. I see a lot of people that have chronic, really tight necks, tech neck, or just really tight necks that are stressed out to the point where their neck is so tight. I think that there's inflammation in those muscles that provokes the vagus nerve to have issues and cause ear ringing. I also think that I've seen a huge connection between Epstein-Barr virus, so monovirus, which typically affects the lymphatic system, so the lymph nodes in the neck. It typically affects the lymph nodes in the neck, and that inflammation there, I think, is provoking the ear ringing. So by that, what I'm meaning is when there's inflammation in a particular area over and over again, our nerve is going to sense that. Our vagus nerve is going to sense that. It's going to send the message back up to the brain, there's a problem here. But if that inflammation keeps continuing, the message back down to stop the inflammation in that area becomes deranged and it can't control it anymore. This is neuroimmune issues. And in particular, I think ear ringing in a lot of folks might actually be an autoimmune effect on the nervous system. It's something to think about. All right, so let's do a little recap and then we'll go into this neuroimmune system. The vagus nerve reacts to epinephrine, which is the fight or flight hormone from the adrenal glands, to trigger norepinephrine in the brain. How does it do it? Well, epinephrine can't pass the blood-brain barrier, so it has to use the vagus nerve to trigger the norepinephrine release in the amygdala and hippocampus of the brain. So then once that norepinephrine is released, now we're going to have a message going back down the vagus nerve. And what that message back down is usually is to stop the inflammation, stop the irritation, whatever it is that's bugging us, that there's a warning sign. Now, the other job of the vagus nerve is to react to acetylcholine and calm us and trigger rest and digest. When we lack the ability to properly release acetylcholine, that is when we have trouble with our vagus nerve. We also have trouble with our vagus nerve when we have too many inflammation factors in the body. So gut bugs, viruses, bacteria, allergens. So lots of, you know, allergy stuff going on like in the spring or fall. Inflammation in the arteries even gets those white blood cells, those cytokines released, and the message goes to the brain and says, something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong. And the message back down in a normal reflex is that the vagus nerve should shut down the inflammation and help with keeping it in check so we don't overreact and we don't kill our own tissue or don't keep this chronic level of inflammation happening. So think about rheumatoid arthritis. This destroys joints. Think about Crohn's disease. This destroys the gut lining. These are cases in which the vagus nerve becomes deranged and can't stop inflammation. And so when it can't stop inflammation because we keep having that message going over and over again, we end up with death and destruction of tissue, otherwise known as us attacking ourselves in an autoimmune condition. So the nervous system connection to the immune system, otherwise known as the neuroimmune system, is what I technically always see often patients who have gut issues with anxiety, nausea, vomiting, depression. It's enough to make someone crazy, like I mentioned before, and that's really where the nervous system is being affected by all the inflammation in the immune system, trying to balance it out and keep in check. So when we have a vagus nerve that's considered toned, its ability to respond to inflammation in the gut and send a relay message through the splenic nerve, actually of all nerves, it can tone down inflammation. But when it's out of balance, this is where we get the neuroautoimmune issues. Big thing here also that I want to just make as a side note is this is why I don't recommend vaccines for anybody who has a chronic compounded illness, like chronic fatigue, chronic fibromyalgia, well, fibromyalgia is technically chronic muscle pain, but fibromyalgia, depression, anxiety, chronic pain, because these unresolved viruses or inflammation, whatever it may be in the body that's not been resolved, can totally be triggered to go out of control if we try to get the immune system to react to a vaccine. Just something to think about in the case of why vaccines can be dangerous for a lot of people. Especially kids. If a kiddo already has a lot of pain and they're young or they're chronically tired, fatigued, depressed, giving them a vaccine might not be the best thing. It might make them actually worse. So just something to think about. Not against vaccines. I can see how they would be beneficial. It's just that if you're going to get a vaccine, you better have an immune system that's working properly. And unfortunately, most of us don't have an immune system that's working properly. All right, so let's focus a little bit on how an overinflamed body can overstimulate the vagus and splenic nerve so that they can't keep the body in check. So like I mentioned before, the symptoms of this, and you're probably like, oh my gosh, do I have any of these symptoms? I gotta like, you know, write this down. There is a state, what I have termed and others have termed as low vagal tone. And the symptoms of this are high blood pressure, so hypertension, depression, anxiety, nausea, obesity, weight gain, insulin resistance, IBS, so irritable bowel syndrome, chronic stomach pain, chronic fatigue, or an extremely low heart rate can also be signs of a low vagal tone. Difficulty swallowing, gastroparesis, this is delayed gastric emptying, which causes people to vomit when they eat too much. Heartburn, dizziness, fainting, vitamin B12 deficiency. So that's the that's just a general list, which is quite extensive. And you might be thinking to myself, it sounds like this person has a adrenal fatigue where their adrenal glands aren't working properly. Yes, it does sound like that. And these folks are the folks that it's kind of hand in hand, really. But these are the folks that are going to be extremely upset. That's what I usually see. The low vagal tone is folks that there's just so many different things happening that they're really upset about why and not sure what's going on. And oftentimes these are folks who are push, go, go, go people too, just like my adrenal fatigue folks. But some of the ones that are really maybe overlooked often is the dizziness, the fainting, the difficulty swallowing. It often gets pushed off as, oh, you're just tired. Oh, maybe you need a little more iron. You know, you should just rest. These things are big connectors for the vagal tone and sometimes some of your beginning symptoms that there's an issue. With dizziness, fainting, and difficulty swallowing, I'm also looking at the thyroid. I'm also looking at Epstein-Barr virus as part of it. So just something to think about as to how all these kind of play together. So if the vagus nerve can be inflammatory producing when it's not in check, but normally it's anti-inflammatory, how does it work? Well, it's been identified that the acetylcholine that's coming from the vagus nerve has a receptor on our white blood cells known as macrophages. So we have multiple different types of white blood cells, but in particular macrophages. These guys are our janitors. And the nicotinic receptors that bind to acetylcholine are also on some of our other immune cells. And we can use as much acetylcholine in our body as possible to block these white blood cells from creating an excessive release of all of the pro-inflammatory cytokines, meaning other white blood cells that are messengers, so basically calling over the troops. So if we want to think of it this way, the acetylcholine released by our strong vagus nerve prevents our immune system, and in particular prevents our white blood cells from sending out a message to call in the troops to fix an irritated area. And so you can see if this is not blocked or kept in check. Now, of course, we do have bacteria and viruses that come into our body day in, day out, and we need that proper reaction to kill them and keep it in check. But we also need to keep our body in check to not overdo it. And this is where autoimmune disease is a big problem and where neuroimmune disease is also a big problem. We have lost the vagus nerve ability to keep our immune system, our proper healthy immune system response in check. So having a low vagal tone means that you can't keep your inflammation in check. How can you work on this? There's a lot of awesome ways that you can work on this. And in particular, one of my most favorite ways is acupuncture and herbs. Now, a lot of folks have even tried something called VN stimulators. So VNS is the short term. So vagus nerve stimulators. It's been found to be helpful in the case of epilepsy, but also it's been used to help with regulation of chronic inflammation in the body in terms of multiple different types of conditions. Epilepsy just being the main one, chronic pain being another one. And it's kind of cool because it's been extremely effective. But instead of having to have a device implanted in your body, why not use acupuncture to help with that? Because with acupuncture, you can attach electrostim. So it's like a TENS unit, but it attaches to your needles. Which also for some folks, you might be thinking, well, why wouldn't a TENS unit work? It might. I don't know. There's no research that's completely outlined it. And I didn't go into it, I will be honest, because of course I am an acupuncturist, and so I was super excited about the acupuncture side of it. Now, there are certain points with acupuncture that you would, that one would use. A lot of them are in the ear, in the digestive region, and on the digestive channels if we're looking at the periphery of the body. Why would that be? Well, one of the main reasons that we are overfed, undernourished, and inflamed is via a concept of metabolic endotoxemia. That is a very fancy word for gut bugs that create toxins in our body, and those toxins get in our bloodstream, and we create epinephrine in response to those toxic items in our bloodstream. And so we create an inflammatory cascade to attack those bugs and our byproducts of the bugs, so the toxins of the bugs in our bloodstream. Those toxins are known as lipopolysaccharides, LPSs. And it's been researched in folks who are overweight and obese, but in regular folks, I think a lot of us have that process going on. It's also especially why I suspect that a lot of us have abdominal weight gain too. Yes, the cortisol, we've been blaming it on that, and it causes deposition of fat in our abdomen, but I also think that we might have some inflammation pathways being provoked by all of the lipopolysaccharide toxins released from non-beneficial gut bacteria in our gut. And how does this happen? Leaky gut. And I've talked about leaky gut a lot in this podcast. And so you gotta get that gut on point. And really, you gotta work on getting your good gut bugs, but you also have to work on not eating crap. There's a club moss called Huperzine A, Huperzia serrata being the genus and species of it, has found to help with this. And I've used Huperzine for a lot of mood disorders. So kind of interesting, just something to think about in terms of how that might help. Now, one of the other big things, I talked about the gut a lot. The other big thing is our brain. And like I mentioned before, we have this response of the vagus nerve bringing in the message saying there's danger in the body, but we can also have danger messages initiated right in the brain. And unfortunately, a lot of chemicals that are in our food get into our brain via leaky gut because they get through our gut, they get up into the bloodstream, they get into our brain, they can cross the blood-brain barrier. And in the brain, inflammation is really managed by two types of brain immune cells, the microglia and the astrocytes. And these guys have a lot of jobs in the brain. They can regulate the structure and function of the nerves. They can help make new nerves. They help with the communication. And they also can remodel and heal nerve tissue. Astrocytes in particular, those guys make up the blood-brain barrier. Microglia, they're like your surveillance team. They're like your bouncers. They keep and alert the brain if there's something in there that's damaging. And for a lot of us, we have a lot of cytokines, so messages being released in the body to call white blood cells over and create an attack. And acupuncture has been found to also help with calming the inflamed state of the brain. And I've worked with a lot of folks in my practice that have had traumatic brain injuries, but also folks who have had some serious cognitive decline after being undernourished and overfed, and worked on that a lot. And interestingly enough, the same acupuncture points that help with regulating inflammation in the body regulate inflammation in the brain too. And so what's happening is you stick the needles into points either in the ear or one that's just below the knee, known as stomach 36, or one just lateral to the knee and below and just a little bit ahead of your head of your fibula on the side of your lower leg. And if you pulse that for 20 hertz, and this is used in milliamps, and I use it at 20 hertz, and I let it just go and get that muscle contracting a little bit of the lower leg, and 30 minutes, and I've seen a lot of great results with reduction of inflammation, anxiety, etc. in the body. And in particular, there's some points in the base of the neck. So there's an occiput, which is kind of this nub that we have on the base of our, not the base of the neck, but the base of the skull. And it's kind of midline. It's like a lump. It's part of our bone structure. That area too can be quite amazing to work with to help folks to manage their inflammation in their body. And research has shown over and over again that the point I was talking about in the lower leg, stomach 36, that increases the effectiveness of the vagus nerve and the ability of acetylcholine to bind to that nicotinic receptor to shut down inflammation. I've also found research that stomach 36, that's the point in that lower leg again, has found to inhibit the lipopolysaccharide, that LPS serum levels that create inflammation reactions from leaky gut. That has also been reduced with stomach 36. And so it's kind of cool to look through all of the different research. And really the 20 hertz with a current of 1 to 5 milliamps seems to be the best way to treat folks. Now, could a TENS unit work? I don't know. It's possible. Especially if someone does have some pain in the body, I would focus on that area. Or, you know, with the ear, this would be more where you'd want to see an acupuncturist because we can hook up the electricity to the spots in the ear. Which, interestingly enough, the ear and the stomach area is in the ear, but the ear is closely related to the vagus nerve directly right there. So I find it interesting in terms of how acupuncture connects with all of this. So just a little geeking out on my part. I won't bore you with all the details. So I've talked about acupuncture. I've talked about how folks have used a stimulator that's been implanted in their body to actually help with the vagal tone. But honestly, there are some really simple ways to work on improving your vagus tone. Now, I've talked a lot about stress management in previous podcasts, and in particular, breathing. The 5-count inhale, 7-count exhale, as I talk about it, is quite possibly the best way to help your nervous system, hands down. And using it going into stressful events that you know things are going to be stressful and using it afterwards. And using it on a daily basis because it's free. Also, levels of physical activity like walking, yoga, gentle stuff. Some weightlifting is fine. It's long-term cardio, 30 minutes on the elliptical, that's going to kill you. Don't do that. Also recommend folks work with their jaw because your tongue position and your jaw have a lot to do with your vagus nerve. And it's because the nerve affects the throat. It's because the nerve affects your tongue. And so I have folks working on getting jaw massages. Acupuncture for the jaw, also amazing. Singing. Sounds funny, but it moves the jaw. Laughing, it moves the jaw. Singing and laughing are great ways to work on calming that vagus nerve overreactivity and getting it regulated, getting it stronger. I also mentioned, you know, working with yoga, like I said before, yoga, gentle exercise, very great. Getting a massage regularly. Another interesting component is fasting. And the reason I say fasting is because if you let your gut have a break, it can reduce inflammation. Now, I don't recommend fasting for too long. In this case, at minimum 12 hours in between last meal, first meal. Start that way. Then move into one day a week where you go up to 18 hours in between last meal, first meal. Then move in to a whole day, 24 hours, and see how it goes. Honestly, I feel quite clear each time I do that. I feel like I've been reset. And I really, truly do believe that the fasting can work to reset your vagus nerve tone. The other biggie here that goes along with that is too many of us overeat. We eat too much food. We might eat as healthy as we want to, and not eating junk food, but we're eating too much. This, I think, is one of my main problems why my vagus nerve tone was lowered and is lowered is because I eat too much. And I'm working on that really hard. I'm hoping to come up with a great plan that is consistent and effective for patients as well as myself. And I will do a podcast on it. But right now, keeping in mind, you know, being very mindful of how much you're eating, that you're chewing at least 20, 25 times per bite so that your food goes into the gut and doesn't cause inflammation just because it's too big of pieces of food. Another thing is a little bit of cold exposure, hot and cold. I'm not a fan of prolonged cold, but definitely in the shower, alternating with a little cold, a little warm, it's good. It can help reinvigorate your system because most of us spend too much time being warm. Another one is earthing. getting out in nature, putting your feet on the ground or grass barefoot. Amazing stuff to help with resetting your vagus nerve. Now, of course, I've mentioned a lot about things in terms of yoga and whatnot. Meditation can be useful. I use the Muse. It's the brain sensing device that helps people who suck at meditation actually meditate. So look into that. I think it's extremely useful. Another biggie that I find interesting in this component is really working on the neck tension, and that's going back to that massage. Open up the throat, sing, laugh, but also get a massage. Some folks gargle. Sounds weird, but gargling can actually help with resetting your vagus nerve because of its innervation in the throat. Now, in terms of vitamins or minerals, zinc is a biggie. Also, turmeric. I'm a huge fan of turmeric. I think that it can be extremely useful in this case. And Turmeric Forte by MediHerbs, my favorite, or Mariva by Thorne, good products to help with getting that inflammation response down in the body. And then there's sun. Getting out in the sunlight, just going and exposing yourself to the sun, and by that I mean arms and face, 15 minutes, just getting out there and going back with nature. It connects back to nature. So you have survived a very long episode of The Health Fix. I apologize. I probably geeked out a little much on this one. Please send me a message. Let me know what you think of this podcast. Keep working on that vagus nerve and its tone, and you will find resources from all of my research studies that I alluded to, in addition to multiple different ways that you can work on strengthening your vagal tone and helping yourself to stay balanced and not fall into the state of dysregulation when that vagus nerve loses its tone. Now, my next podcast, I'm going to go into heart rate variability and how that plays in to your vagus nerve tone, but also taking it to a different level because heart rate variability has been strongly related to recovery from workouts. But I want folks to look at it in terms of other things that happen in their life and how their heart rate responds to foods, how their heart rate responds to stressors, how their heart rate responds to just relaxing and chilling out and seeing that data for themselves. So stay tuned for my next episode. I'm going to go into heart rate variability as it relates to this kooky naturopath and acupuncturist and how I can help to manipulate that. And if you haven't had acupuncture and you're suffering with some of these symptoms of low vagal tone, I highly recommend it. It's a great way to tone up your body in a gentle way and a very balancing way. To see all of the different ways that you can work on toning up your vagus nerve, head on over to my website at drjkrausnd.com and look at my podcast notes. And I've got a link in there in terms of all of the resources that I use to create this podcast, but also all of the different things that I suggest to help you with toning up your vagus nerve. And this is for anybody, not just folks who have active symptoms right now. This is for anybody to keep you healthy for life. All right, you survived another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning into The Health Fix, the podcast all about taking control of your health, rebelling against aging, and having fun every day. A lot of patients ask me, do you think I'm aging too fast? So I created an evaluation checklist for you to see for yourself. Plus, I created a resource guide to help you slow down the aging process right now. You can find it for free on my website, drjkrausnd.com. If you like this podcast, help get the word out to others by liking it and rating it. If you'd like more natural health tips and want to join our Facebook community where I interact daily, click on the Join Group button on our website at drjkrausnd.com.